The Outspoken Cyclist podcast is supported by the Dodd Camera Company. An Ohio institution in photography for over 100 years, Dodd Camera has stayed right in step with the newest in digital cameras and accessories, as well as offering services such as photo restoration and large format printing. Dodd Camera stores are located in Cleveland, Dayton, Cincinnati, Chicago, and now Columbus in the Oak Creek Shopping Center on Cameron Avenue. If you don't have one in your town, you can find them online at doddcamera.com. At Dodd Camera, the focus is on you. Welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist, your weekly radio connection to bicycles and cycling, as well as fitness and other related topics. The Outspoken Cyclist is a radio show produced by cyclists for cyclists. And now here's your host, the Outspoken Cyclist herself, Diane Lees.
Hello, welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Lees, along with Tim McKenna.
Hi, Diane.
Hi, Tim.
It's a lovely day in January, isn't it?
And there are only 35 more until March 1st.
What's March 1st?
March 1st is the psychological beginning of spring for people in the bicycle business.
Why is that?
Because that's when people start calling and say, can I bring my bike in for a tune-up?
So tell them, start doing that in February.
Well, you know, February. That's a whole month that we're hoping we just kind of like skate over.
Zip right through, except for Valentine's Day, right?
Well, among other things. February has, my sister's birthday's in February.
So is my sister's.
Oh, all right.
But let's talk cycling.
Okay. Well, you know, one of my favorite Facebook posts this week was of a beautiful wolf sitting calmly staring at the camera. But the caption was, the groundhog said 6 more weeks of winter, so I ate him.
I think that's how we all feel most of the time.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I have similar feelings. Well, but anyway, they yanked that poor Punxsutawney-filled dude out of his, you know, comfortable bed. I would bite the people. I can't believe he doesn't bite people.
Well, I'm sure he's well taken care of, much better than most of the rest of the groundhogs or even Buckeye Chuck or whichever one it is that we're
exactly. Well, that said, we're going to shake off some of the winter blues with humor today. We're going to head on out to Utah to speak with the fat cyclist.
The fat cyclist?
Well, at the beginning of this month, you might remember we spoke with journalist and commentator Dan Worry. During our conversation, he mentioned his contribution to Eldon Nelson, also known as the fat cyclist's new book, The Great Fatsby. Do you remember that?
I love that title.
I know. In addition to the naming rights, Dan also wrote the forward and backward. Okay, so now you're starting to get a picture of the wacky conversation we're probably going to have with Eldon, right? But there's really more than just humor to Eldon. He isn't just about self-deprecation and humor. Nope, he's also about walking the walk, or should I say riding the trail, and talking the talk. He's completed the Leadville 100 17 times.
17.
17. And he's also raised millions of dollars for charity.
That's fabulous.
So, you know, along with, he also holds a full-time job and has custody of 7 children. He's a busy boy.
So the book shouldn't have been The Fat Cyclist. It's how to figure out what to do with your time.
Yeah, exactly. So he's going to be with us in a moment. We have news this morning, good, bad, and interesting. And yes, indeed, we are literally also only 6 weeks away from the North American Handmade Bike Show.
Already.
So I don't know how that's possible. It's beyond me. But it's not too soon to talk with the founder and owner of the popular handmade show, Don Walker. The 11th edition of NABS will take place in Louisville this year, as if it hasn't been in cycling, in the news enough about cycling, you know, with Cherokee and all that. But this time I think it's good news. It'll be March 6th and 8th. I'm thinking Louisville in March might be a good place to be.
I think so.
It'll probably be kind of springy.
Right.
That would be nice. The show looks as if it's going to be a good one. Lots of new exhibitors are signed up, and the venue looks pretty spiffy. So I think with that, we're going to say sit back, pop open an adult beverage unless it's early in the morning. I know a lot of people listen on, you know, listen to us on Sunday morning via podcast.
Adult beverage is fine Sunday morning. It starts the day off well.
I see.
While you're inflating your footballs or whatever you're doing.
Or not inflating your footballs, as the case may be. Let's roll on out to Utah to speak with the fat cyclist himself, Eldon Nelson. Eldon, thanks for joining us on the show this week.
Well, thank you, Diane. Nice to be here.
Yeah. So a few weeks ago, we spoke with your friend. Of course, we're using that term very loosely. And contributor to your new book, The Great Fatsby, Absurd Cycling Stories Disguised as Expertise and Insight, which is hilarious unto itself. Mr. Dan Worry suggested we might find some interesting things to discuss with you. And I would agree. I believe that we are going to have some fun.
That's super nice of Dan to have even suggested that. It was such a amazing piece of luck for me to be able to get him to write the foreword, and then jokingly I said, hey, would you write a middle word and then and a backward? I called the afterword as well, and he said, yeah, sure. As it turns out, Dan has a complete inability to say no to anyone for anything.
Yes, I know. He's adorable, and he's a lot of fun to talk with, and he also has a lot of cycling knowledge. I'm always interested to speak with him. He was the guy we used to wrap up 2014 this past year.
Yeah, so. A perfect guy for it. He really does. He knows his stuff. Unlike me.
Yeah, right. Okay. Well, we're going to disprove that probably. So tell us a little bit about Eldon and like your background and your work and a little bit of your cycling history.
Well, I have been riding as a cyclist for, I would say, right around 20 years, maybe 19, 20. You know, I don't remember the exact start date. But I have been blogging as Fat Cyclist for 10 of those years. Actually, I'll be hitting my 10-year anniversary for this blog in April or May.
So wow.
I've been writing about riding about half as long as I've been riding.
Wow. Where did the name Fat Cyclist come from?
And it came from being fat.
Yeah, right. I can see you. You are not fat. We are on Skype. I know you're not fat. Do not lie to me.
Well, I'm not as fat right now. I tend to have sort of a winter thing. When I started the blog, I had gained probably about 50 pounds over my racing weight. I had recently... pretty much had a perfect storm of stresses. My wife had cancer. I had a 2-year-old twin toddlers. I had sold my house and had moved to a new state, taking a high pressure job.
Wow, that sounds like sort of a recipe for disaster.
And that's not even the end of it. Actually, I then got a Bell's palsy.
I know what Bell's palsy is. It's very scary to look at, though, because one side of your face droops.
Exactly. I did not know what Bell's palsy was when I got it. I just found out suddenly. Half of my face stopped working, and everything tasted like metal. And so I thought I had a stroke. But
sure.
Long story short, the doctor prescribed steroids, and I just. You know, along with everything else, I just bulked up, gained a ton of weight. And at some point, I'm only 5'7". So when I hit around 200 pounds, I said, OK, it's probably time for me to do something about this. So I thought I would shame myself into a state of being able to ride again competitively, because I do love racing. And so... that's where Fat Cyclist came from. And originally, it was just me saying what my current weight was to the few friends that read the blog. And the thing kind of went viral just by some little pieces of luck. There were, a couple of stories that I wrote just because it got boring to talk about nothing but my weight. And... those got passed around, and Cycling News found out about me and gave me a column for a little while, and I got some readers from that and other things like that. And little by little, I built an audience.
Well, your audience is big now. And this is your second book, The Great Fatsby. I love the title. The title just knocks me out. I just love it. When you get your copy, if you get your copy, you will see that it's the same typeface if you think about what the Great Gatsby typeface looks like. You know, you you picked up on that. It's on the front cover. It's very, very cool. Very, very cool.
Yep. Kudos to Kim Dow for that one, of Kim Dow Design. This is a self-published book. You should know that.
Oh, I didn't know that. I guess I didn't look at the publisher. Oh, Fat Books Publishing. Look at you.
Yep. So, yeah, I self-publish using a local publisher as well as CreateSpace, which is Amazon's self-publishing arm. And, you know, it's pretty amazing that, you know, if the cool thing about cycling for so long is, you know, a lot of writers, and all of those writers have other skills that they are that they have. And so really, I didn't go in search of a graphic designer. I just I know someone who is a cyclist, you know, Kim Dow, who is associated with Bike Monkey, which promotes fantastic races, and also is a fantastic designer. She did the book design for me. And her husband, Greg Fisher, who is also with Bike Monkey, he edited the book. And Dan Worry, who, you know, writes for Velo News and who I've never met in person.
But really?
Fantastic guy. Yeah, yeah. I know him the same way.
I do, probably.
Oh, you've met him?
No, that's the same way. I've never met him either.
Huh. Well, you know, most of us haven't met each other. It's kind of fun the way social media has kind of brought a bunch of us together without ever ever really meeting in real life.
That's an interesting point.
So many people I would love to get together and ride with. So many.
I'm speaking with Eldon Nelson. He is the fat cyclist, only he's not fat. And his new book, The Great Fatsby, Absurd Cycling Stories Disguised as Expertise and Insight, which parenthetically, along with plenty of how-tos and fake news, it is volume 2, 2007 through 2010. Does volume 1 have a different kind of tenor than volume 2? And I don't mean that to be, you know, like an insult. Is it just as absurd?
I would say it is just as absurd. I think there is a different tenor for this second one. The reason being is I wrote this one. I intentionally chose this time period because it is the lighter half of what was undoubtedly the darkest time of my life. 2007 through 2010 was when my first wife, Susan, was fighting and eventually passing away from cancer. And that will be the third book. I already have a title for it. I am working on it. It's called Fight Like Susan.
Nice.
And that is all of the other stories that that I wrote in the blog during that time. But for this book, I should say, I picked the stories that I wrote during this period. And it's different in that I was being, I guess, more intentionally funny. A lot of the writing that I was doing during this period, it was almost sort of an assertion, a personal test, you know, that even with all this going on, I can put, I can put hand to keyboard and still type something that is fun. I can still type something that is funny. And so, all of these represent, I guess, harder work than the stuff that I published in volume one, because volume one was just, it was all the low hanging fruit. It was the fun, the easy stuff that, just sort of fell out of my head. This was harder to write, when I was writing it in the blog. And honestly, I feel like it's a little bit more, I guess, well crafted and I guess vigorously written and edited, just because I had to think harder and work harder to be funny during that time.
Yes, I can certainly understand that, and I am sorry for your loss. That is that has got to be one of the hardest things to go through in life, is to lose a mate.
It is, and the acknowledgement page or the dedication page in this book is actually to my readers who helped me get through.
Yes,
a really
I did
tough
notice
time.
That, and I didn't know the whole story, so now I know more, and I think that's really, really nice. Actually, I will read that. This book is dedicated to everyone who reads and comments at fastcyclist.com. Some people might love to write for the sake of writing, but some of us need an audience. If it weren't for you, there's no way I would have stuck this out for 10 years. More importantly, this book is the funniest stuff I've written during the hardest and darkest period of my life. You readers got me through this incredibly difficult time. I owe you a debt of gratitude forever for the kindness you've shown me. I think that's pretty awesome. acknowledging your readers. That's awesome.
Oh, I love my readers. And actually, that's one of the things that I really love about this book. I seem to have fantastic luck in the kinds of comments I get in my blog.
Well, that was going to be my next thing, to talk about some of these comments.
Yeah, I am so lucky. I have people who write things that I feel are often, you know, that often have me just being the straight man. You know, I tee something up and then, you know, people will run with it. And that was one of the great pleasures in editing this book, was going through, in many cases, you know, 50, 60 comments and, you know, having to winnow it down, but being able to go through. And it had been a long time since I had read the comments to the blog, and some of them are just so funny. And it was a lot of fun going through and sort of reliving a lot of the hilarious things that my readers write.
They do write really, really funny things. I think in some ways you're right. You get to set up the joke and they get to, you know, smack the punchline out.
Yeah.
There's a whole section about chains. You know, everybody breaks a chain occasionally. And this guy, we'll just call him Al.
Al Maviva.
Maviva, yeah. Look on the positive side of breaking a chain. Even though it filleted your crotch and left your teeth scattered on the trail, a busted chain is really handy if you happen to get in a fight with the Hell's Angels on your way back to the trailhead. Just crack me up. I really want to talk about the real Eldon Nelson. You are not just the great Fatsby. First of all, you hold down a full-time job that takes up a lot of your time. Mm-hmm. But you also are an accomplished cyclist who has completed, if I am not mistaken, 17 Leadvilles.
Yep, completed 17 and DNF'd on one of them. So
what was wrong with you that day? No, I'm just teasing.
You know, that actually, I don't want to keep going down the sad path, but that was the year that I did that race 1 week after my wife passed away and did not have my head in the game, and the road turned. I didn't. It was that simple. I was that shocked or stunned still, and I just
sure.
I crashed out. Yeah. The other 17 times I have finished.
Yeah, 17 is a lot. I know some people who have not yet been able to finish. So the other thing that you do is you raise millions of dollars for charity. How do you do that? What are you doing to do that?
First of all, there are so many things that go into that. First of all, I raise money for charities that I love and respect and that I feel like are doing a lot of good.
For example,
I've raised a lot for Livestrong, and you know, really just still you know, even with all of the, you know, the rough patch that they've been going through, still really respect and admire the work that they do for survivors. I am currently working really hard with a couple of different charities right now. The two charities that I am really actively fundraising for are World Bicycle Relief, and the other one is Camp Kesem. And World Bicycle Relief, of course, provides very sturdy, purpose-built bicycles for impoverished nations, for school children in Zambia, for example. And Camp Kesem provides fun, week-long, free camps for the children of people who are fighting cancer. So it gives kids a chance to take a break from watching a parent, be in their struggle.
Where is that camp?
That's the wonderful thing about Camp Kesem. It is nationwide.
Wow, why have I not heard of this?
Oh, you need to look into it. It's one of my favorite charities, just because it does such great things for kids. It is generally located near universities because the counselors are college kids, right? And then they I don't know if they rent or otherwise have donated camp time at a nice camp, and kids of cancer survivors or parents, you know, or kids who have lost a parent to cancer, in my case, they get to go, and for 5 days they have an incredibly funny, silly time, and it's not a lot of, you know, deep, you know, talking about feelings. There's a little bit of that. Mostly it is just an incredibly fun camp for kids who need to have some fun.
Is there an age limit or range for the kids?
I don't know if what the youngest age is, but it goes on up at least to age 16. And then after that, there's actually, if I understand right, and I'm kind of getting closer to that with my twins who still do go to Camp Kesem every summer. It's their favorite thing, where they can start acting as sort of like counselors in training. And that's what my twins now say they want to be when they grow up. They want to be Camp Kesem counselors. So,
wow, how cool is that?
I love seeing them pay it forward like that.
Yeah,
I love
no
that they
kidding.
Have that mindset.
So how do you do the fundraising for these organizations? What kinds of things are you doing that brings on in all these hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars?
Well, I have a couple of different strategies, a couple of different fundraising modes. The Camp Kesem one, I actually have an annual I'm going to put, you know, doing air quotes here, a race called the 100 Miles of Nowhere, where people pay to ride in their own neighborhood, you know, define their own course and ride 100 miles of it. In my case, you know, around a couple of blocks that go near my neighborhood, go around it 25 times. Or, you know, there are other people who – there's one guy who rode around his neighborhood on his unicycle for 100 miles. And they pay around $150 for the privilege of doing something ridiculous like this. I'm able to acquire some nice swag for them, and all of the money goes to Camp Kesem. So that's one way, just a silly non-race race. And then the other way I do it is basically by doing contests. I'm lucky enough to have a lot of great relationships with people who and companies who know that I fundraise for some great causes, and IBIS and Specialized and SRAM and many other fantastic companies will donate fantastic prizes, and then people will donate for a chance at possibly winning something. And very few people win anything, of course, but they might, and for sure they're going to donate something to a great cause.
So do those contests show up on your blog? Is that how you do it, through your blog?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Wow.
I tend to do them just at certain times during the year. I have, for World Bicycle Relief, I do something called a Grand Slam for Zambia. And it sometimes it's happened around Christmas time. This year it'll probably happen more in the February, March time frame. Just starting to work on it now. And the idea is to raise enough money to buy 1,000 bicycles for kids in Zambia, you know, hence Grand.
Once again, I'm speaking with Eldon Nelson. He writes the blog fatcyclist.com. What are some of the plans you have going forward? Now, this book is done. You have another one ready to write. But what else are you doing, like you need more to do?
Oh, boy.
I know you're raising a bunch of kids.
We are. The youngest, though, however, are 13. And so a lot of the, at least the raising part, you know, that's all behind
True.
Us. Now it's wrangling and wrestling. but as far as what I have coming up and going forward, of course, there's a Fight Like Susan book. That's my next one in the Best of Fat Cyclist. I think there will be one more humor book to come out. And I am working on a secret book project as well. All that said, the book I'm probably most excited to be working on is one that my twins are writing. I had probably one of the most exciting, revelations of my life recently, where one of my twins, she's only 13, she came and showed me that she has written about 45 pages of her first novel. And it's good stuff. I said, if you will finish this book, I guarantee you that I will spend the time to get it formatted and professionally laid out and published. And I guarantee you there's an audience for this. So it is exciting to see, you know, one of my 13 year olds, kind of following my footsteps.
Are these identical twins?
They are identical twins, and they have some identical gifts, but one of them, they're both very artistic, very creative. They're expressing it in a little bit different ways, and that's a lot of fun to see.
I'll bet. That is really cool. So let me ask you about your bikes.
Oh, I have I have a ridiculous number of bikes.
Everybody has a ridiculous number of bikes, and you know it's X number of bikes plus one, N plus one. That's always the bike. You know, I want the next one. What's your favorite bike? Can you say that?
You know, if it were just N plus one, I'd feel like I have it under control. I'm currently shopping around for about three different bikes.
Okay.
The bikes that I am currently excited about and you know, like, and reloading the webpage on.
Yeah.
Okay. I am excited about the Specialized Fat Boy here in Utah. I would love to have one of those to ride around. I am excited about the Cannondale Scalpel. I want to do some cross-country racing, try to get lighter and faster, and I really love that bike. But I also am kind of well, I shouldn't say kind of. I'm also very excited about the Felt 9 FRD, I should say. All three of these are, you know, so I guess all three are mountain bikes that I'm most excited about right now. You know, all for racing, all for different purposes. And so, yeah, I'm an N plus three guy. So I guess that's my problem.
Well, I don't know if I'd call it a problem. I'll bet there are a lot of people out there going, wow, only three.
That's probably true.
It is probably true.
As far as favorite bikes, I would say that I have to divide it into favorite road bike and favorite mountain bike. Currently, my favorite road bike is the Specialized Tarmac SL4. I have a SL4 S-Works from 2014, and it is so sweet. I mean, it's and all tricked out with NV wheels and with Durace components, and it is a dream bike.
Is it DI2?
No, it is not DI2.
Interesting.
My previous road bike had DI2 and I loved it, but then I tried the mechanical Durace and I said, this is plenty light for me. And I went with that. And, you know, I'm not the kind of guy who would make argue one way or the other that one is better than the other, but I am perfectly happy with mechanical Durace and don't feel like, at least on that bike, that it would be any better with DI2. That said, on my Shiv, I do have Ultegra DI2, and on that bike, oh, I love DI2. It's nice to be out on the aero bars and be able to shift so easily and so
right.
forth. So, love right. it there.
Do you have any touring bikes?
I don't. You know, I've never gone touring.
How interesting.
How interesting and sad, huh?
Well, I didn't listen. I don't have a judgment. I just said how interesting. Parenthetically, maybe you'll want to do that someday.
Oh, do I? I would love to be able to get out and do that. Right now, I do still have kids at home,
of course,
and I still have a full time job, and the blog does not pay the bills. So it is something to look forward to. In the future, I would love to get out and do some bike packing in particular, really get out there and see some of the country that way. And so, yeah, bike packing is just one of the things that I haven't done. It's funny to have been riding for so long and still have so much left to do. Maybe that's why I'm able to keep blogging about biking for 10 years. But, you know, I've never bike packed. I have never raced in a velodrome, and I look at that and I would love to do that. I'm watching all of the hour record attempts and
yeah.
I'm thinking,
yep.
I am desperately interested in trying my own personal hour record. Not that I expect maybe I could go 50% as far, 70, 60. I don't know how far I could go if I were to try my own personal hour record, but I would love to see if I could go an hour all out the way that all of these pros are doing right now, just see, you know, what the experience would be like, or to find out, at that kind of effort, I can only go 30 minutes. That would be cool to find out too.
Well, how old are you?
I am 47 and a half.
Well, you have plenty of time.
Well, thank you.
You have lots of time to do this stuff. Lots of time. Well, you know what? Dan said this would be fun, and it has been fun. And actually, we've almost been talking a half hour. How's that?
It doesn't feel like it's been any time at all.
I know. And it's been a pleasure. I've been speaking with Eldon Nelson. He is the author of the book, The Great Fatsby. He is also the author of the blog, FatCyclist.com. And where can people get a copy of the book? Because if you self-published it, where is it?
Amazon is the best way to get it. You can get it as a Kindle book or as a paper book. And just go to Amazon.com and search Great Fatsby or search Eldon Nelson.
It has been a great pleasure to speak with the great Eldon Nelson Fatsby. And thank you so much for joining me this evening on the show. I hope you have lots of fun this year on your bikes, many of which, and that you get all the bikes in your wish list.
It has been so much fun talking with you, Diane. Thank you.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Eldon Nelson joined me from his home in Utah.
Eldon sure is enthusiastic about a lot of things. Just like a little kid when he starts talking about his bikes. I think that's so neat.
That's right. He is neat.
For anybody that maybe didn't catch it and was interested, Camp Kesem is spelled K-E-S-E-M.
Oh, very good.
They have a great website. And actually in Cleveland, Case Western Reserve has one. Yeah. And at Ohio State.
Down in Columbus.
Yeah, those are the two in Ohio. And there's a map that has all the information, and they've got all the other stuff. But it does look like a really neat program.
Well, Dan was right. He was a lot of fun, and he certainly, boy, he can do a lot of stuff, huh?
Yes.
We need to take a break. You are listening to The Outspoken Cyclist. We'll be right back.
WJCU, University Heights, from the campus of John Carroll University.
We'd like to thank our podcast sponsor, Dodd Camera, for their support of The Outspoken Cyclist. There is a close relationship between cycling and photography, and we're proud to have this family-owned business as a partner in our show. If you're in the market for photo equipment, want to learn more about taking great pictures, or maybe you're ready to launch your own YouTube channel, visit DoddCamera.com and see what Dodd Camera can do for you.
We are back on The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm Diane Lees.
And I'm Tim McKenna.
And we're going to do news. What you got?
One of the things that I've been doing this week is spending some time on YouTube watching the Tour Down Under. It's really great coverage. And one of the things, I think we need to come up with a sponsor that's going to be able to send us to remote locations so we can do some of this coverage a little bit better.
Is that right?
Just me watching it on YouTube.
We'll just see how that works.
Yeah, just not. Okay. So one of the sad things that came out of the Tour Down Under is rising Australian cycling champion Campbell Flakemore had surgery on Thursday after breaking his collarbone in a post-race crash during the Tour Down Under. BMC team doctor Scott Major said Flakemore had a clean break in the middle of his left clavicle. It's the best place for a fracture to occur. It's also most amenable to fixing it surgically. Flakemore was riding back to the race hotel from the stage two finish at Stirling in the Adelaide Hills when the accident happened. It was a left-hand turn, and on the shoulder there was gravel, or I maybe hit a bit of a groove. The next thing I knew was I was on the ground. As soon as I got up, I knew something in my shoulder or collarbone was pretty bad. Flakemore was riding 50 to 60 kilometers per hour when I fell. I still don't understand why guys are riding their bikes back after 3.5 hours on the bike while they're going up and down the crazy hills.
Like walk them back?
Stick them in a van somewhere or do something else to get them back a little safer.
What can I say?
I understand. My team will do things differently. How's
your
that?
Team? Oh, okay. All right. All right. What you got next?
So let's talk some doping.
Oh, why not? And this came it's early out of, in the game.
It's early. So this came out of Paris. Italian cyclist Diego Ulissi has been suspended 9 months by the Swiss Olympic Committee after testing positive for banned substance salbutamol during last year's Giro d'Italia. Given that his ban dates to last June, Ulissi, who lives in Switzerland, will be allowed to return on March 28th. The 25-year-old Ulissi won the 5th and 8th stages of the 2014 Giro, testing positive after the 11th stage. He had double the permitted amount of the drug in his system.
Oh, so wait, it is a permitted drug, but only up to a certain
Yes. So as we talked off the air, why do these guys keep doing it? And I think they keep doing it because they can.
Yeah, evidently.
And, you know, if I
eat tainted... Well, we have another story later on about you can't.
Well, if I eat tainted meat in China, maybe that's a good enough excuse, right?
I guess. All right. This might seem a bit early talking about triathlon in this hemisphere, but the USA Triathlon Foundation announced a special grant program this week, and this is very cool. It comes out of Colorado Springs. USA Triathlon Foundation today announced its first ever grant program, offering up to $50,000 in funding for individuals, clubs, teams, and organizations to support and promote the sport of triathlon in 2015. Grants will be awarded based on applications to establish or develop programming and support related to at least one of the foundation's three focus areas, providing support to youth, paratriathletes, and or U.S. Olympic hopefuls. Consideration will be given to applicants that open pathways to athletes who may not otherwise have the opportunity to participate. Grant applications must be submitted by Saturday, February 28, 2015. Funds will be distributed in March. Each grant proposal is eligible to receive $5,000. Funds must be used in 2015. The application is available at usatriathlonfoundation.org. I think it's really exciting. Very exciting.
I'll call this one my video of the week,
okay.
The kangaroo.
You know, did it ever really ever show the kangaroo itself?
Yeah.
Oh, I guess I didn't watch it all the way through. It's not that long. It's only a minute.
It's a short. And this one is at the canberratimes.com.au, I'm sorry. Former Australian cricketer Bronwyn Kelvar knows how to handle the odd bouncer, but the kangaroo she collided with while riding her bike near the lodge on Monday almost got the better of her. Miss Kelvar, a member of the Australian women's cricket team that won the World Cup in 1997, is now sporting a gash across her knee. She spent most of the night in a hospital after she hit the kangaroo at 6:25 p.m. while cycling back from work. She's cycling down a road, got to near where there was a guardrail in the kangaroo. It just hopped over, just like the deer did in our video a couple weeks ago.
Right.
And it just, out of nowhere, just popped in there. And it was, you can see how easy it was to just take her right down. And she
kangaroos are big.
Yeah.
And they're powerful.
And fast.
Okay. So besides the wolf eating the groundhog, which it really probably didn't. My favorite post of the week is of a carbon fiber bike called a Dogma. All right, it's pink and white, and it looks like, you know, a lot of the other carbon fiber bikes out there. And you know how we always joke, well, the dog ate my homework?
Yep.
Well, in this case, the dog chewed through both the top and down tubes of the bike. Now, my first thought was, carbon fiber is nasty stuff. It could splinter. I mean, it isn't palatable. It's nothing you could really eat. But at any rate, the bike is a disaster. If you want to see it, we have a picture of the pink and white bike, the Dogma, on our Facebook page.
Yeah, that was my first thought also. How's the dog? Because I've seen working on rowing shells and other things that are carbon. When you split and you break that, it's not exactly the softest, most comfy thing in the world.
No. Somebody posted, after I posted the picture, somebody's comment was, nothing like that would happen to my steel bike.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
Lee Donovan.
Yes. What about her?
We always forget to mention about Lee Donovan when she's at Ray's Indoor Mountain Bike Place. They do a women's weekend, and it's coming up in Cleveland. It's coming up February 6th. So it's coming up very quickly.
Very quickly. That's 2 weeks.
That's 2 weeks. And in March, I believe it's March 13th, they'll be in Milwaukee. So we always miss this. It's always after the fact.
Maybe we can get her here.
I would love to do that. I want to make sure that we get it out there. So anybody that might be interested in the Women's Weekend, where they have pro clinics, they have all kinds of door prizes, and they have other things where you get to ride with Lee and learn a lot of great stuff in an environment that's perfect for that, you can go to Ray's and check that out.
This is from the Monkey See, Monkey Do Laboratory of Manufacturers, right?
Okay.
FSA announces an electronic shifting group this past week. Just what we need, another electronic group. SRAM was also testing its prototype at the Tour Down Under. But from FSA's original denial in December that they would not sponsor any teams with their new electronic components, at least two teams will be sporting the group when the season begins and when the group is available. It will not be available at the start. This week, Kaylee Fretz at Velo News reported that FSA is the official drivetrain and component sponsor of both Tinkoff Saxo and Etix Quickstep, which used to be Omega Pharma Quickstep. And according to a representative from Specialized, which also sponsors both teams, the upcoming FSA electronic group, which both teams will ride later this year, according to separate sources, isn't ready yet. They will be riding DI2 for the time being. So, yes, monkey see, monkey do.
Well, along that same vein, on bikeradar.com, I found an article on power meters of the 2015 World Tour. They list 17 teams and which power meters they're using, what data they're getting from it, and all of the other good stuff that goes with it. So if you have any interest, you can go ahead and take a look at it there. I think it's fascinating how they're figuring out all the good stuff that goes with that.
All this data?
Yes.
Go out and ride your bike.
Yeah, just shut up and ride.
I found a new Facebook page I like this week. It's
okay.
Probably been there forever, and I just haven't seen it. It's just called The Cyclist. There are a lot of interesting comments and photos and stuff, but probably one of the best. Okay, Green Bay Packers got beat, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Michael Bennett of the Seattle Seahawks went for a joyride on a police bike after they beat the Green Bay Packers. Now, I cannot tell the brand of this bike, but Mr. Bennett is not a small person. He's a big dude. So I'm hoping that the bike can take it. But anyway, that was kind of...
And it didn't have big fat tires or anything on it, right?
No, it just did not.
Some good news in the city of Cleveland. This is, as of Thursday, the Cuyahoga County Council green-lighted a pedestrian bridge that's going to go from the Cleveland Convention Center over to the lakefront, which is by the Rock Hall and by the Science Center. You can actually go down there, either walk or cycle there, if you go down East 9th or if you go one of the other ways. But this would be a specific bridge that would be just for that purpose. And I think it's a great idea. The ticket for this is $10 million to build and $25 million.
Ooh.
It's actually $25 million is what it is, but they're going to borrow $10 million in order to do that. And then maintaining it is, that's a whole different issue. I don't know if we need it or not, but I think it's a great, if we can work the money out for Cleveland, that'd be great.
Well, this wouldn't be for you, this one.
Okay.
Because you don't breathe well enough.
No.
No, you have asthma. But if you would like to, the CRM Grand Fondo New York Columbia will leave you breathless, they say, not only because of its scenic course, but also because the start is in Bogota at 8,660 feet. And with two distance options, one is 105 miles or 170 kilometers with 9,800 feet of climbing, or the 60-mile, 100-kilometer medium route with 6,500 feet of climbing. Both routes will challenge the CRM Grand Fondo New York Columbia participants. If you are interested, it is coming up April 26th. Sounds like a lot of fun, actually. You can go to grandfondony.com and find it. Well, some time ago, you wanted to be able to just click on something and see everything that was going on with cycling in every state.
Yeah, it's frustrating when you start
not
to
anymore.
Look to here to there. Oh, really?
People for Bikes launched a new page on their website this week. It's a map of the U.S. And if you click on your state or any state, up pops a page that has everything, including key statistics, local shops, grants to local groups, stories, blogs. So if you want to go see it, you can find it under the Get Local tab at the top of peopleforbikes.org. It's nice.
I think that's great because so many times we, you know, if I'm going to travel to Florida or if I'm going here, or I'm going there, it would be great to be able to just pop in somewhere, see what it likes and, you know, what's available and go from there. That would be great.
All right. You got one more short one? We got one more short one, maybe.
One short, quick. And this is comes out of Madison, Wisconsin. We've talked in the past about some bike share programs that work and some that don't work. Here's one that actually is working, the Madison B-Cycle, which they launched back in March 20th. Last year, it took 104,274 trips in 266 days, and they put in over 219,000 miles biked on that. The average number of checkouts per week, 2,674. So there's a system that's working, and Madison gets this funny thing called snow and cold and all kinds of other stuff. It's not someplace,
we don't know anything about that.
It's not someplace fun like, you know, Miami or right. San Diego.
That's awesome. Well, Madison is a cycling town.
Yep.
No question about it. On that note, we are done with the news. We need to scurry on down to Kentucky and talk with the owner and founder of the North American Handmade Bike Show, Don Walker. Thanks for joining us on the show this evening.
Hi, Diane. Great to be back. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. For those who don't know, and I can't imagine hardly any of our listeners, but it's possible. We have some new listeners this year. In fact, we probably do have a lot of new listeners. Tell us a little bit about the history of the North American Handmade Bicycle Show.
Sure. The show actually grew out of a concept that a lot of us had from the old forum. It was framebuildersatfred.org, and I believe it was P-H-R-E-D. And, you know, there was a lot of newbies coming up in 2002, 2003, 2004. And some of the established builders, had always talked about, you know, we need to get these guys on the right path so they don't make the same mistakes that, you know, we made when we were young builders, you know, just starting out. So, I kind of, you know, said everybody's been talking about, you know, getting together. Well, I'm going to do it, you know, so I just kind of concepted the thing. I booked a ballroom in Houston at the Sheraton in Brook Hollow. And, you know, we had 23 exhibitors the very first year. And some famous names were there. Richard Sachs, Craig Calfee, Nick Crumpton, who wasn't famous at the time but is now, and several other, you know, builders and a couple of component manufacturers. And we got together, and, you know, one thing that I did was, you know, figuring that, you know, a lot of the newbies would be there, I invited the public, too. I sent out a bunch of press releases to the local media, so we had a couple news crews come, and, you know, the newspapers reported on it and everything. So that was kind of the meager beginnings of 23 exhibitors and about 675 attendees, and, you know, it's just gone, you know, up from there.
And so now let's fast forward. This is NABS 11 coming up in this March.
This is number 11, yeah.
This year it will be in Louisville.
Yes, it will be in Louisville.
At the Kentucky International Convention Center. So now I know that San Jose happened twice, right?
Yes.
But other than that, the show has only made a stop in one or another location. Last year it was in South Carolina or North Carolina?
It was in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Charlotte, North Carolina. And then, you know, it's been as close to us as Indianapolis. We're very excited because Louisville's close to us and we'll be able to drive down there this year. It's been a lot of places. How did you come to pick Louisville?
Honestly, and I've been given some grief by some of my exhibitors, and, you know, I won't mention them by name. That's all right, guys. I still love you. But I was given grief because, you know, they're like, oh, well, you just picked it because you live there. And that's not actually it. You know, I was considering Louisville after we hosted Cyclocross Worlds last year, and everybody that came from out of town loved Louisville. I have not heard one person say, Louisville sucks, man. I would never go there. Everybody that came to Worlds loved it. We've got a great food scene. Our mayor, Mayor Greg Fisher, has been working diligently to bring in more bike lanes, and he is trying to be as bicycle friendly as he can be. He has we affectionately refer to it as the mayor's ride. He has it on Memorial Day and Labor Day every year, and it's the mayor's hike, bike, and paddle. And the last two times that I've gone to it, the spring and the fall, they had between 8,000 and 10,000 cyclists.
Holy smokes!
Doing the mayor's ride. It's from all levels. You would have experienced, you know, semi-pro racers to, you know, little kids just riding along for their, you know, first time with their parents. But it strung out. You know, Jenny and I were on the tandem, and we started on the front, you know, row, and we were only, you know, maybe the second row or whatever, but we finished maybe 2 minutes back or so from the people that that wanted to really race it and everything. And we saw cyclists on the route nonstop until it was about 2 miles from the finish. So on a 15-mile ride, there was 13 miles of cyclists.
That's so cool. That is so cool.
It's amazing. And he's, like I said, Mayor Fisher's really been, you know, busting his butt trying to make it safer for cyclists in Louisville. With that effort and everything in how we did Worlds, and, you know, we've got a good cycling culture here, and a lot of people don't know that. Louisville has some of the best, most scenic riding that you can get. If you go just north of the Ohio River, you can get it, you know, some really steep hills, you know, in Floyd's Knobs area. And you can, you know, go south of Louisville and get the Jefferson Memorial Forest, which has got some good hills. I live out in Oldham County, and the flattest road I have is only flat for about a mile and a half. it's some of the best riding, most scenic riding. It's a beautiful area. And, you know, how can you disagree with good food? And what's that other thing we've got here? Oh, yeah, it's called bourbon. How could people say no to this location?
I can't imagine. I know an awful lot of people who are looking forward to it to try and get their hands on some pappies.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah, that's a tough find.
Yes, it is.
But, you know, funny you should say that, because I went bowling last Friday with Jennifer and her kids and my daughter. And the bowling alley had the biggest selection of bourbons I have ever seen.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. I don't know why it does, but it does.
I kid you not, I've never seen a chalkboard that took up an entire wall have nothing listed but bourbons.
Wow.
It was amazing.
I'm talking with Don Walker. He is the founder and owner of the North American Handmade Bike Show. And evidently, we got talking about bourbon, which is kind of cool. Now, I don't drink it. My partner Brian does. And I understand, you know, Kentucky's the place to be. If you want bourbon, it comes from Kentucky or it ain't real. Although Cleveland whiskey is supposed to be pretty good. We've got some people trying to be hot on the trail. Your exhibitor list this year seems pretty full. Who are some of the newbies?
You know, that's a great question. The list turns over quite a bit because, I mean, they may be newbies, you know, this year, but they'll be, you know, seasoned exhibitors by next year.
Right.
Some of the new exhibitors that we've got, Ceramic Speed, the Bearing folks.
Oh.
Connor Wood Bicycles, although I think they've been with us. Probably the biggest news, I'd say, is the relaunch of Fat Chance. Chris Chance is relaunching the brand at NABS.
Oh, my goodness.
That is huge.
We talked to him, I'd say it was over a year ago, and at the time you could hear it in his voice. He had not made the decision, but at the time you could hear that sort of longing to be back in the business, and I'm very excited for him. I hope he does well, and I can't wait to see him. I haven't seen him in years, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, talk about the seminar program. You're going to have seminars this year?
Yes, we will. We've got the normal, let's see if I can find it and have it in front of me. We've got the normal stuff, Laura Van Dixhorn talks about the insurance requirements and what you kind of really need to be in business. That's always a pretty well attended seminar, very informative.
It's also an important seminar.
It really is. I mean, if you're a frame builder, I mean, the first and foremost thing you want to do is you want to protect yourself and you want to protect the people that ride your bikes.
Right.
So that's really important. So and insurance is the best way to do that. So I know we're having a titanium seminar.
Okay.
And actually, something that some people might be interested in is something that I approached you with, which was kind of a frame builders round table and have you moderate it. So.
Yes, you did. I didn't want to bring it up until you brought it up, but it is true. The Outspoken Cyclist is probably going to be moderating a frame builders panel. We have not put it together yet, but that's coming up in the next couple of weeks. So we'll talk about that as soon as we get the people nailed down right to the chairs. Your show has become one of the most anticipated events for the consumer. How do you think the custom bicycle segment is doing overall these days? I mean, there are so many bikes that you can go into a bike shop and spend multiple thousands of dollars and yank them off of a shelf, which never makes any sense to me when you can spend the same amount of money and get the perfect bike for yourself. But so how is the custom bike business doing? And of course, you are a builder, so you can sort of speak to that anyway.
Right, right. Yeah, that's absolutely true. It depends on who you talk to. There's guys out there that are doing really, really well. They'll have 6-8 weeks worth of backlog or whatever, and as soon as they get done with one bike, the phone just magically rings and they take another order, so that their backlog is consistent. There's other guys that are complaining, hey, my phone's not ringing as much as it used to. So we're you know, here at NABS HQ, I'm trying to, you know, get my finger on the pulse of what's going on in the industry and figure out, you know, is there something that maybe we're missing as NABS as to why everybody's not busy? You know, am I missing something here? You know, I don't want to say, hey, this is my fault and put, you know, the weight of the world on my shoulders for these guys. But I you know, kind of somewhat feel responsible if a builder's not doing well.
Well, but you have to remember, Don, that if you go to any big trade show, certain booths are going to be busy and certain booths aren't. And it just, it's hard to say why it is that way. Some things appeal to people, some things don't. That's a hard one. That's a very difficult one. And I'm trying to say, don't feel responsible. It's not your fault.
and you're right. And I'm not saying really I'm feeling responsible, but you know, I feel bad when a builder's having a rough time.
Sure.
And because, I mean, I'm trying to give them all the tools that they need to succeed, you know, by having NABS. I mean, we get the attendance there, you know, the attendees there. We get the media there, you know, so stories get written, guys get interviewed, pictures get on the web, pictures get on, you know, personal people's, you know, or attendees' blogs and, you know, Facebook and Instagram and Twitter posts. And you know, and so the social media of it, you know, aspect of it really kind of, you know, does help the builders.
Oh, yeah. That stuff's up there from the second you open the doors.
Absolutely. So I'm trying to figure out how we can do something with, you know, like a contest for maybe the best tweet or something like that. You know, hashtag,
what a cute idea.
Hashtag NABS 2015 or something. I don't know. But, you know, we'll figure something out in the coming, you know, days before the show. But, you know, I want to do something. And our friends over at Henry James, they also are the True Temper distributor. They are actually, you know, wanting to have a little tweet contest. And they're going to be tweeting or giving the certain hashtags to use. And you can win a set of tubing. There will be three sets of tubing available to win on the floor for the best tweets. So,
well, that's very cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, let's let our listeners know how they can find out more about the show. What's the website?
Sure. It's 2015-2015.handmadebicycleshow.com. And if they go there, it's got all the information right on the homepage there. You can register for the daily pass or a two-day pass or a three-day pass, the seminar pass, and, you know, stuff like that. So 2015-2015.handmadebicycleshow.com.
And it's March 6th through 8th at the Kentucky International Convention Center in Louisville, Kentucky. Don Walker, thank you so much for talking with me. I'll see you in Louisville.
Oh, thanks so much, Diane. I appreciate it. Right downtown Louisville. We're going to have a great time. Come on out, y'all.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Don Walker joined me from his place in Louisville.
I think Louisville's a great place to have it, and it is in the Midwest, and it doesn't matter whether it's February
not south,
or
huh?
When it is. It's not.
I think of Kentucky as south because, of course, I grew up in Cincinnati,
right.
And that was not south.
Yep.
But at any rate, it's always good to talk with Don. That was kind of fun, and he's got some good ideas for this year. I love that.
And it's also good to see Chris Jantz back.
Oh, my goodness.
And we talked about this before, but he has a Kickstarter campaign to
Yes, we talked about that a couple weeks ago.
Which is really neat. It's good to see that this is a great way for somebody to get back, that the opportunity is there to do it just this way.
Right. Well, we're going to kickstart ourselves right out of here. Thanks for listening to The Outspoken Cyclist this week. We will be back next week with a brand new show. If you're in one of those places where it's not icy and snowy, go for a ride. If not, get on your trainer, even though they're not real miles. Have a great week. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Lees. We'll be back next week at this same time with more conversation and news from the world of cycling. If you missed any part of today's show, download the podcast from iTunes or WJCU.org. And you can follow the Outspoken Cyclist on Facebook and Twitter to keep the conversation going throughout the week. The Outspoken Cyclist is a copyrighted production of DBL Promotions with the assistance of WJCU FM Cleveland, a service of John Carroll University. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.